Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Kidnapped for Ransom by Jacqueline Adam. After her husband's murder, Dr. Chelsea Eadman discovers he wasn't the man she thought he was. Behind the white picket fence life, a heist that leaves $500,000 worth of diamonds unrecovered. Now the mobster he stole from and an old accomplice think Chelsea knows where the diamonds are hidden, but that's not stopping them from hunting her and her 4-year-old daughter Linnell down. With danger closing in and her daughter's life at risk, Chelsea turns to the only person she can, the childhood friend she once almost loved.
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, my guest is Jacqueline Adam, who lives in British Columbia with her husband and two incredible children. So I'm delighted to welcome you, and I'm looking forward to our talk about writing and all things authory. So welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me today. I'm so excited to be here.
So I love, this is one of my favorite questions, but what drew you to writing romantic suspense?
Oh, you know what? I have to be honest. I grew up loving the genre. I watched romantic suspense movies with my mom and my sister every week, and there was just a huge love of them for us. And what I loved most about the characters was that they were just ordinary, everyday people, and they were flawed, and they weren't perfect, and they were thrown into these incredible situations that were completely outside of their control. And there's just something about me that roots for that underdog, and seeing how they rise to the occasion and how they find that inner courage to kind of overcome those impossible odds. I just love the genre.
Yeah, I do too. And one of my favorite is that ordinary person, thrust into extraordinary circumstances that are not of their making, and they have to figure it out. Yeah, those are such fun to write. For me, the story idea sparks a lot with the what if. It could be something I saw on TV or in one of my, I'm a huge fan of BritBox, watching British shows. I'm like, well, what if I did this? And then your mind just goes racing, or it could be a love of a setting. So where's your inspiration come from? Can you pinpoint anything particular, or what's your creative process in figuring that out?
So for me, it often will start with this inciting incident. So I'll get an idea. Like you said, it could be from a show. It could be from the news. There's just that little bit of a granule, that little spark. And then once that happens, sometimes I'll think, oh, you know, this would be really cool. Like for me, I just thought, well, wouldn't it be fun to have like an action scene happen on whitewater rapids? And so for me, that really, all of a sudden, I knew I wanted the story for Kidnap for Ransom to take place in Oregon. So then I started doing research about what are some cool whitewater rafting places in Oregon. And then that's how I came upon the Rogue River. And it was such history there. There's the hiking trails there. There's the stunning canyon. I just fell in love with it. And just, I find the inspiration for the stories, it comes from a mix of finding those right places, and then the more you find out about it, the more it's like, oh, what happens if the characters did this? And it runs away with itself.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that is what makes, us authors come up with so many different scenarios. I remember whenever I talk to readers, they're often like, oh, it's amazing that you can come up with this stuff. I'm like, I mean, that's just how my brain works. I'm always thinking of what if. I'm always looking at conversations or people or ideas and just thinking, can I spin it to my current story, to a future story? And like I told my agent one time, I was like, my problem isn't coming up with ideas. It's focusing on what idea will turn into a story. So I'd love it if you wanted to talk a little bit more about what is your process in figuring out if this what-if idea can actually sustain a story. Because I think you and I both know, and our listeners, if you're readers, you may or may not know this, not every idea can be turned into a novel.
No, it's very true. Like, some ideas are just fatally flawed from the beginning. And I think for me, my process is usually starting with a story, getting that inciting incident, and sitting with it for a bit of a morning and seeing. I'm not a plotter. Some authors like to plot out from beginning to end, and I find I love the idea of plotting. I think I would be a much faster writer if I was a plotter, but I fly by the seat of my pants. And so for me, when I'm writing it, once I sit down with that inciting incident and I can't think of, I call them my tent posts. So it's like two or three other scenes that I want to go with the story. If those don't come, then I know the story isn't going to go into anywhere right now. And what I'll do is I'll just put that into a book, where I like a notebook, and I'll save that idea for later, because it might just be that I haven't attended the right conference where there's like a writing tool that will really help me flesh that idea out in a different direction. I just know that idea is not for right now. But what I like to do is have that inciting incident, have a couple scenes in my head where I think things are going to go, and then I write towards those tent poles. And it's a lot of fun because sometimes I'll write something, let's say in chapter two, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to keep that idea. That's kind of a weird thing that happened there. But I just leave it and I continue on. And what's fun is sometimes you get all the way down to chapter seven and something happens and you realize it totally ties into that other event that you had no idea why you wrote that. And those are some of my favorite moments in writing. It's just when it all starts to just unfold and roll together.
Okay, no one can see me because we're only recording this, but I'm doing the same symbol with my hands, the same. And I am a mostly panster as well, although I am learning more to love the synopsis, but we don't need to talk about that right now. But it's the same thing, because I'll be riding along, and then I'll get to, like, chapter 10. I'm like, oh, that's why I did that in chapter 3. Perfect. So, our brains all work different. I wish I could plot. I wish I could go, and I've tried it. I've tried a million different methods, and I realize I need to have the flexibility to make some changes, although I am getting better at getting the basic story structure in place. Like, I know what needs to happen. I know the kind of the story arcs, and I know who needs to be, why there's happening. Although I must say, I don't always know who the villain is. I usually have a couple of ideas, and those kind of evolve sometimes.
Fun when that evolves too, because it's, I think it really makes the story, like, because you're surprised as you're writing it, and I think the reader is equally surprised, right? So
yes.
Those are such fun moments.
They are, and I love how, I don't know, my brain just kind of ties them together, and I tend to like to write the suspenseful mystery where we have the suspense, there's definite danger to the hero and heroine, but they don't know what's happening, and they're kind of getting the clues along the way. I read much too much Agatha Christie as a kid and a young teen, and I just love that mystery part. So I almost always cloak who is the villain, just because I enjoy that. Enjoy that part. So, yeah, it can be so much fun. So when you're writing, what happens when you get stuck? Do you have like a pick me up? Do you have like a beverage of choice, you take a walk? I mean, what do you do to kind of get yourself going again? Because we all, no matter how wonderful writers we are or how self-motivating we can be, we do hit those blocks sometimes. So how do you get yourself unstuck and get going?
So for me, there's a couple things that I do. So when I initially start with my characters and writing the book, I'll often do an image search on the internet. It'll just be something like female in her late 20s and just some basic descriptions. And then I'll find a picture of my character, and I have a little Ivy printer, and it's like just a small little image. And I put all the images of my characters on the bulletin board. And sometimes I just stare at them for a little while, and sometimes that's enough to spark like a dialogue that helps me get unstuck. Other times when that's not working, then I'm really fortunate where we live backs onto some woods. So I will take my dog for a walk out in the woods and just sit and kind of contemplate, because sometimes you just need to get out of your own head for a bit.
Yeah.
And then there's also those moments which are really hard where you've, at least I have days where it doesn't matter what I write, I just become a little bit overly critical and nothing's coming out right. And on those days when I can't shut off that internal editor, I'll call one of my writing buddies and she'll be like, okay, you need to knock it off.
Yeah.
And we just kind of, you know, because she's like, sometimes you just have to embrace, let the bad dialogue be there right now, and you can come back and you can fix that when you edit it next round. But right now you just need to keep on moving.
Yes. Yeah.
Sometimes that's the biggest help, is just to move forward.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And I tend to sometimes I'll tell people, look, when I'm stuck, if I'm really stuck, I'll like blow something up or have aliens come to my, and I know I'll just write something because that will, and then I know I'm going to delete it, but that's okay. I'll just do that and move on. And it really does help. Or I'll take a break, or I'll, go outside and just sit on my front porch swing sometimes if the weather's nice, even if it's cold, sometimes I'll go out there for a little bit. But getting yourself unstuck it can be really fun. Well, we are almost out of time. Is there one more thing about your writing life or that you would like to share with our listeners today?
You know what I think I'd like to share is just, I think that romantic suspense, Christian romantic suspense, is an amazing genre. And I think sometimes people will kind of dismiss it as fluff. And I just want to say that I think it's a great way to reach non-Christians. It's a great way that is not so scary, because some people will never feel comfortable going into a church, but they do feel comfortable reading a book. And like I said, a lot of these characters are regular, everyday characters, and they struggle with their faith. And I think it just makes it approachable. I think it makes it accessible to everybody. So I for those that want to just dismiss romantic suspense as just fluff, I think there's a lot more in there than what some people give it credit for.
I love that, and I agree wholeheartedly. Well, thank you so much for sharing on my show today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Now an excerpt from Kidnapped for Ransom by Jacqueline Adam. Never in a million years did Dr. Chelsea Edman think her evening jog would descend into a situation like this, and yet here she was. Her feet pounded the sidewalk at a grueling pace, pushing the red baby jogger up the hill at a speed that excited her 4-year-old daughter, Linnell. The little girl let out a whoop of delight when the stroller jumped over a heave in the sidewalk. Normally, Chelsea would have laughed with her, but this evening she barely registered her child's excitement. "Dr. Edman, I just want to have a quick word with you," the reporter called from the open window of his car. Chelsea ducked her head and pushed herself harder. Just yesterday, her mother had told her to call the police when reporters harassed her. But the police had their own agenda with her these days, and Chelsea wasn't sure who was more trying, the endless reporters or the relentless police. They both wanted answers from her, and both refused to accept she had none to offer them. If she did, she would have shared them with law enforcement months ago. "Dr. Edman," the reporter yelled. Chelsea's grip tightened on the baby jogger. What was it going to take for people to believe she had been blindsided by her dead husband's lies? She glanced at the reporter, the question burning inside of her. Nothing she had said or done so far had made them accept the truth. She honestly had no clue that her late husband was a diamond thief, and she hadn't the slightest idea who murdered him 16 months ago or where the diamonds were now. But this reporter would never believe that. Even the police didn't believe it. Chelsea increased her pace, making her lungs burn. If only her husband had been the property developer she had thought he was. If only that life had been real. "Dr. Edman," the reporter called again. Chelsea pushed her pace. Up ahead, she could see the turnoff to her aunt's house. "Almost there," Chelsea said, more to herself than to Linnell. The car engine revved beside her, drawing Chelsea's glare. Without warning, the vehicle turned sharply in front of her. Its front tires popped up onto the sidewalk and came to an abrupt halt, barely giving Chelsea time to swerve the stroller onto a neighbor's front lawn. Linnell's screams tore through Chelsea. She shoved the stroller behind her, turning to face the car. The blonde reporter got out of his vehicle and walked toward them, his wide smile and polished good looks doing nothing to mask the cold determination in his eyes. Chelsea knew men like him. To them, she and her daughter were nothing more than a salacious story that could make their career. "Doc Reedman, I'm sorry if I scared you and your daughter," he said, pulling out his smartphone. "I'll have your job for this," Chelsea hissed, noticing the empty pouch where she usually kept hers. "Of all the days to forget it." She crouched in front of Linnell. Tears streamed from her big blue eyes. "It's going to be okay," Chelsea said, softly caressing her cheek. "I'm scared, Mommy." "I'm going to get us back to the house. Don't you worry." Chelsea felt the reporter angling behind her, videoing her and Linnell with his phone. She pulled the sunshade over her daughter's face and stood tall. "What station do you work for?" "Look, I get it. You don't like this, but you've been stonewalling me."
"My husband's death is an active investigation. I've said all I can say to the media."
"Nobody believes that, and nobody will unless you give me a private interview." Chelsea gestured to his car on the sidewalk.
"And you think this is the best way to get me to do that?"
"Tell me your story and I'll leave you alone. No more following you around, no more showing up unannounced. Your life goes back to normal."
"Do you seriously expect me to believe that?"
She awkwardly turned the baby jogger around.
"How does a wife not notice that her husband is planning a large jewel heist? There must have been some warning signs."
He shoved his camera inches from her nose. "Were you too busy with your job to notice, Dr. Edman? Too many late nights at the office, prioritizing patients over family? Or were you working with him?" Chelsea stared at the ground and kept moving forward.
"I will not cry," she repeated to herself. "I will not cry."
He grabbed the stroller's handle. "You can make this stop with one interview."
"Let go," Chelsea yelled, smacking at his hand.
"When they discovered your husband's body, the police never found the diamonds."
He leaned in closer.
"Where are they, Chelsea?"
A strong jet of cold water from a garden hose hit the reporter square in the back.
He jumped, sputtering, momentarily letting go of the stroller.
"She said for you to leave her alone," yelled Mrs. Sanchez, a kind neighbor of her late aunt's. "Run, honey, I've got this."
Chelsea seized the moment.
"Thank you, Mrs. Sanchez," Chelsea called over her shoulder.
Mrs. Sanchez waved and turned up the water pressure. When she reached the house, Chelsea immediately locked the door behind her. Her daughter's cries rang in her ears as she raced to unbuckle her from the baby jogger.
"Let it all out," Chelsea crooned, wrapping a Linnell in her arms.
Tenderly, she stroked her little girl's blonde hair, rocking her until she grew slack in her arms before tucking her into bed. Chelsea then found her way onto the back deck. The coolness of the fall evening prickled her skin. She took a deep breath. What a day. First, the long drive from Seattle, and now this. Chelsea stood at the railing, watching the solar garden lights begin to flicker on.
"I miss you, Aunt Edna," she said quietly, gazing at her late aunt's colorful garden that brimmed with oak leaf hydrangea, pineapple sage, and asters. "You would know how to handle this."
Chelsea stared at her phone briefly, then dialed.
"Hi, Mom. Just wanted to let you know we got here safe."
"Are you okay? Did something happen?"
"Why would you ask that?"
"I can hear it in your voice."
Chelsea bit her lip, wondering how much to say. The last few months had been almost as hard on her parents as they had been on her.
"A reporter showed up here in McMinnville. I didn't think they'd find me here this quickly."
"Are you and Linnell okay?"
"A little shaken up, but we're fine."
"I knew you girls shouldn't have gone down there."
"Mom, we've talked about this. With Aunt Edna passing away, someone needs to prep her house for sale. Both you and Dad are working, and with the clinic letting me go because of all the media attention, it just makes sense for Linnell and me to stay here for the fall."
"I don't like the idea of you both being so far away," her mom said.
"Can't that neighbor Matt take care of things? He was always helping your aunt with repairs."
"He's not a contractor anymore. Matt's a busy police officer," Chelsea said gently.
"And he's already looked after the place until the FBI okayed me to come down here. I can't ask him to do more."
"Then maybe we list it as is. We don't need to renovate.
The pink toilets say otherwise."
Her mother laughed. "Fair enough."
"Look, I understand where you're coming from," Chelsea said, leaning against the white railing. "I do, but I could really use the extra cash from a good sale price on this house. Things are tight right now."
"You know, Chelsea, God, Mom, I love you. Please stop."
"Chelsea, Mom," she said gently, "I know where you're headed with this, and respectfully, I just can't with God right now."
Chelsea squeezed her eyes shut. A gentle breeze moved through the yard, stirring the melodic wind chimes.
"I love you," her mom said.
Chelsea sighed.
I love you too. I'm sorry. I just wanted to let you know we arrived safe, she said. I didn't mean to worry you. It's in my DNA to worry. Your dad and I miss you, girls. I should go, though. We're late for Bible study. We miss you, too. Give Dad a hug from us, Chelsea said, hanging up the phone. She moved away from the railing and sat on one of the old wicker loungers, sinking into its deep cushions. Chelsea stared out over the yard. Everything was different now that Peter was gone. She'd thought things would get easier, but here she was, 16 months later, still feeling like she was free-falling. Chelsea pulled her knees up to her chest when a creak of the porch stairs jolted her upright. The blonde reporter from before stepped up onto the deck. "This is private property. Get out of here before I call the cops," Chelsea said, sounding braver than she felt. No reporter had ever been this brazen before. He lifted her cell phone off the railing and threw it into the shrubs. "And how are you going to do that?" Chelsea lunged for the sliding glass door, but he closed the gap between them, slamming her face first into the door. Her nose throbbed as he flipped her around to face him. He leaned in close, his nose inches from hers. "You don't know who I am, do you?" Chelsea stared at him, trying to push back the fear that burbled up inside. Did she know him? She racked her brain, but she couldn't remember seeing him outside the hordes of reporters. Could he have been a patient, maybe? His fingers tightened their grip. "You're not a reporter, are you?" she said. A grim smile spread across his face. "Peter said you were smart." "Who are you? What do you want?" "Your husband ever mention his old friend Ian?" She squirmed her shoulder, trying to get free of his grasp. "No." "I'm done playing games," he shook her. "Where are the diamonds?"
"I don't know."
Ian's eyes narrowed into cold green slits seconds before his hands moved to her throat. His thumbs pressed into the hollow at the base of her neck. Chelsea gagged for breath, her hands clawing at his, desperate to loosen his grip. "Try again, Chelsea. I did the job with him and I need those diamonds. Where are they?" He shook her again, smashing her head hard against the glass door. Chelsea gasped desperately for air, moving her jaw like she was trying to speak. He loosened his grip and she let out a piercing scream, shoving his chest, trying to break free. Ian didn't budge. Instead, his grip tightened on her throat, silencing her into a gurgling choke. She stared up into his face, watching it twist with rage. Her hands clawed at his, trying to loosen his tightening hold. He was gonna kill her. Chelsea thrashed harder, fighting to remain conscious. With every ounce of strength she had, she kneed him in the groin. He grunted, his grip momentarily loosening. "Help!" she screamed as she heard the back gate slam shut. "Police!" Matt's familiar voice boomed. Suddenly, Ian let go of her, and Chelsea slipped down the glass door to the rough wood decking, struggling to breathe. She got to her knees as Ian jumped over the railing, knocking over the wicker table filled with plants. Dirt and terracotta shards showered the deck like birdshot. Matt thundered up the steps. "Chelsea?" He crouched beside her, concern etching his face. "I'm all right," she croaked. Matt looked to where Ian had jumped over the railing. "Go," Chelsea said, meeting his deep brown eyes. "I'll be fine." His gaze washed over her, likely assessing the truth of what she said. "Call 911," he said, and then took off running after Ian.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.